the debate over Maine's constitutional officers. Currently, Maine's Attorney General, Secretary of State, and State Treasurer are chosen by the legislature each session. That is not the case in every state. In fact, Maine is the only state in which the Attorney General is selected this way. Over the years, there have been several attempts to change Maine's constitution in order to change the way these officers are chosen, and there are renewed efforts this year. The governor wants to appoint the AG and treasurer and wants to do away with the Secretary of State position in favor of a lieutenant governor. Another bill before the legislature would have all three chosen by the public. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll get a civics lesson and discuss what's the right path for the future of our state's constitutional officers. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. And from the MPBN studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Constitution of Maine stipulates that the state's Attorney General, Secretary of State, and State Treasurer all be selected by the state legislature, but many people think that that is old-fashioned and needs to change. Today, we're going to discuss why some people do not want to change the state constitution and why others do. With me in our Augusta studio, Andre Cushing. He is a Republican state senator representing Hamden. Roland Danny Martin is a Democratic state representative from Sinclair, and also with us, Jim Melcher, a political science professor at UMaine Farmington. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you think Maine should change how it selects its constitutional officers? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today in the Augusta State House studio. And I want to start with you, Jim Melcher. Give us a civics lesson. How did it come to be that Maine selects its officers, its constitutional officers, this way? How long have we done it this way?
Well, it's been done since the original 1820 Constitution. And unlike a lot of states, Maine has not gotten rid of its constitution and started over. Many states did that in the 1950s, 1960s. We've certainly amended the constitution, but a lot of the basics are still there. And you think of the political context of that era, it's an era where there was a lot of power of what people call small R Republicanism, not the party, but the political philosophy. And it didn't necessarily have a lot of faith in voters, but its biggest feature was fear of executive power. They were afraid, much like the revolutionists in the 1770s, that putting too much power in the executive branch of government was inherently dangerous, that you should give as much power to the legislative branch as possible. And the original governor's term in the 1820 Constitution was 1 year. Imagine what the current governor would have to say about that, although I think he'd probably be ready to run for re-election and go out and campaign if he had to do it. John Adams famously said, "Where annual elections end, tyranny begins." So there's a strong sense of wanting to put limits on the executive branch of government in that era. And then we didn't change as some states did because there wasn't as much impact of Jacksonian democracy. You know, Andrew Jackson really led a political movement where he said, everything should be elected that you can, and it should be on a partisan ballot. So in the town where I grew up in, we have a county coroner on a partisan ballot. We have a county surveyor on a partisan ballot. I'm not really quite sure how a Democrat, Republican, or communist candidate for that would differ, but Maine never really had that sort of movement like a lot of other states did. So to some extent, it's a remnant of an older political philosophy, wanting to be very cautious about executive branch power.
So in most other states, are the Secretary of State, Attorney General, and State Treasurer elected by the public?
In most states, they are. Every state has an Attorney General. In 43 of the 50 states, it is elected. Tennessee has the state Supreme Court choose. And then there are five states that have an appointment system. New Hampshire has an appointment system where their executive council is able to ratify. Other states have the state Senate do it, like New Jersey does. Some states have both houses do it. But 43 states have some kind of election, and usually a partisan election for attorney general. I think there's something like 35, 36 states that elect their secretaries of state, and a similar number of state treasurer. So it certainly is the norm to do it that way, but different states have different constitutional offices. On the other hand, a state like Michigan has a partisan election statewide for the boards of regents for its three biggest state universities. So there's a Democrat and Republican running for the Wayne State University Board of Trustees, which I'm not quite sure why the public needs to vote on that. But most states vote on way more than we do. No state votes on fewer statewide elected officials than Maine.
Interesting. Senator Cushing, you've introduced a bill to change things. What would your bill do, and why? Why is this important to you?
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate the question. I'd rather just sit here and listen to Jim share the history of it. We might learn something important. My bill, this is the bill that would require a public election of the three constitutional officers, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, and the Treasurer. Currently, the legislature selects those individuals for a two-year period. There's a fourth office, the auditor, state auditor, that's selected for a four-year term, and it's still selected by the legislature. I focused on the three constitutional officers because I felt two things needed to be considered. One was the fact that we're dealing with two-year terms, and I think for the scope of business that is necessary for these individuals, going to a four-year term might be more appropriate. I think particularly if you're going to ask them to run for office and still do their duties, 4 years is more appropriately. Secondly, I feel that we have been very well served by representatives in both parties. The legislators typically have known the individuals. Some of them obviously known them better if they served in the legislature.
Many of them are former legislators, yeah.
Exactly. There are always opportunities, I think, in there to look at this and say, okay, these are good people, but are they really the best options we have available to us if they're picked in a closed system? So having a public election has that value. And the second value that I think, just from a strategic one, is if we are going to have these continue to be partisan positions, as we are a maturing state and we're losing some of our senior statesmen in both parties, there needs to be an understanding of what it is like to travel this state to run for office. And constitutional officers having to do that to be elected by the populace would see a broader perspective of what goes on. So if they did wish to run, then they would already have established a platform and a better understanding of what the needs of the state are from traveling it.
Representative Martin, you co-authored an editorial in the Bangor Daily News saying, really talking not only about Senator Cushing's bill, but some of the other bills before your committee that would change this. You say, we're fine just the way we are. Why is the way Maine does it better, in your view, than these other states that Professor Melcher was talking about?
Well, first, Jennifer, thank you very much for the kind invitation to participate in this afternoon's panel. LD 957 is Senator Cushing's bill, which we heard a little over a month ago, if I recall. And we tabled that, a couple weeks ago, pending results and testimony and et cetera on three other pieces of legislation that affect our three constitutional officers. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, in work session, the bill was voted out of committee. It has not hit either floors yet. But the majority of us, as a matter of fact, there were two individuals, two state senators that were absent. But as we stand, the vote on Senator Cushing's bill is 11 ought not to pass. Quite frankly, we were concerned about more money in politics. I mean, you know, with elections today, I was a state senator several years ago. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how long ago, but I was very young. And my first Senate election cost me $200. And now a good Senate election can cost you up to $40,000-$50,000. A state Senate election can cost you $50,000-$60,000. And that's unfortunate. So we were concerned about the issue of check and balance, which is, I think, really important. Concerned about having folks on my side of the aisle, of course, concerned about the lack of institutional knowledge. It's great to have the legislature have a say on who your attorney general, your treasurer, and your secretary of state are going to be. And I think either party, even when the IRS control the legislature, it's great to have somebody that understands the system, is qualified, and through the popular election process, that may not necessarily be the case.
Is the reason this is percolating up this session because of the friction between Governor LePage and the Attorney General, Janet Mills?
I, Jennifer, I think not. I mean, this has been here before. As a former legislator, I've seen these pieces of legislation before, as Senator Cushing well knows. But more so this year because of the current sitting chief executive. Yeah, so the answer would be yes, in my opinion.
All right. We don't have someone here from the governor's staff to talk about his proposal, but Senator Cushing, your proposal has these positions publicly elected. The governor wants to appoint the attorney general, appoint the treasurer, and then do away with secretary of state and have lieutenant governor. That was also came before your committee. Was there a vote on that?
Those three bills are LD 1417, 1418, and 1419. As you mentioned, Jennifer, one would require the governor to appoint the attorney general. And the concern that we had on that one was a power grab situation. I'll put it very bluntly. In the check and balance situation, I've served in the governor's cabinet for 8 years as former commissioner of IF&W with the Baldacci administration. And I understand serving at the pleasure of the governor. You're literally hired by the governor, and you can be fired by the governor. So you have to be loyal. Now, here's the attorney general, who's the chief law enforcement officer of this state, differing on an opinion with the person that has hired him or her. So where's the check and balance? Yesterday on this particular piece of legislation, 1417, eight members voted ought not to pass, and five members voted to pass in the minority report.
Okay.
So that bill will be hitting the floor in the next week or so, I suspect.
Okay. And Senator Cushing, if your bill, the publicly elected officers, does not go forward and pass the legislature, would you support the governor's proposal, or would you prefer for it to stay the way it is?
I think that the dialogue the governor has started, and it's interesting with Jim's opening explanation of this, I think there is still a balance of power question, because the bill, as I understand it, would allow the governor to appoint, but it would require the Senate to confirm that. So there still would be somewhat of a check and balance here, not unlike what we do with justices, commission members, or board members that are appointed by the governor. It still goes through a hearing process and ultimately has to be presented to the Senate for their approval of the committee report. So it's not exclusively, as I understand the bill, the governor gets to hire and fire the attorney general.
Well, you're right in some sense, Senator. If you look historically in the past, how many individuals who have been appointed by the governor have not ultimately succeeded in being ratified by the state Senate? Very few, very little, as you well know. But once it's ratified and confirmed, you then serve at the pleasure of the governor, which means at any moment in time, without probable cause or just cause, you're gone. And that's a concern. And the concern was the check and balance, especially with the attorney general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Secretary of State and state treasurer, it's a lesser degree. But and the folks on my side of the aisle just had a big concern with that. And more so, with all due respect to the current sitting chief executive, we were extremely concerned about the lack of the check and balance and the conflict that exists between our governor and our current attorney general, who, in my opinion, is doing a terrific job in her capacity.
Yeah. Before we get to the listener calls and emails, I want to talk about this whole idea of a secretary of state versus a lieutenant governor. Jim Melcher, Professor Melcher, what's the difference in states that have, are there states that have both a lieutenant governor and a secretary of state? Are there other states who have one or the other?
Most states have both. I think there are six or seven other states that don't have a lieutenant governor. And lieutenant governor's a pretty different office depending on where you are, but historically largely existed to replace the governor if something happened, what we have as the Senate president's role at this point. What has been the trend with with lieutenant governors in recent years is to say, well, largely this is an office where they're just a presiding officer. They don't really have a job to do. Let's give them something. So when Tony Earle was governor of Wisconsin, he said, I'm going to make my lieutenant governor and head of the Department of Tourism. Or other people would say, I'm going to give them a specific role. I'm not familiar with any case like the governor's proposing of rolling in the Secretary of State's function, but I think it makes sense to, if you're going to have a lieutenant governor, and I think it does make sense to have someone that runs with the governor replace the governor if something should happen to the governor. I think I would agree with the governor on that question. It makes sense to have that chosen that way, but I'm not sure necessarily that you'd want to fold the Secretary of State's position into that as an office, particularly considering the election functions of that.
Secretary of State oversees elections.
Exactly. And I would have some anxiety about having that as somebody who is part of the governor's team. But I think the governor is right in saying if you're going to have a lieutenant governor, they really should have something to do. They presumably wouldn't preside over the state Senate. We've got a Senate president for that. It makes sense to give that person a specific task, whether it's a different one different governors do or something constitutional. I'm just not sure I think Secretary of State is the best way to go. But most states have a lieutenant governor. If somebody voted for Governor LePage and something, God forbid, happened to him, I don't think most of the people who voted for him would anticipate that they wanted Justin Alfon, you know, for whatever you want to say about him. That probably wouldn't have been their first choice as a replacement for the governor or a Democratic governor the same way. So that piece of it does make sense to me, but I've never heard of Secretary of State being folded into the lieutenant governor's office.
Okay, on that note, we have to take a break. When we get back, your calls and questions, we'll be sure and get to Mike in Holton and Anthony in Mapleton, please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Casella, committed to increasing recycling rates while reducing residential trash and landfill loads through zero sort recycling. Casella, giving resources new life. And Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education opportunities by investing in Mainer's success. FameMaine.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the encrypted internet underworld, where black markets, criminals, trolls, pedophiles, and extremists hide.
It's really a sort of wild west, because you have anonymous users visiting sites that can't be censored.
We talk with Jamie Bartlett about his new book, The Dark Net. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Here's the latest on our Portland signal, WMEA FM 90.1. We now have a temporary low-power signal in place, which is reaching some, but clearly not all, areas of southern Maine. We also expect to be back on the air at full power, serving our entire southern Maine listening audience, probably this afternoon. The problem is about 200 feet up on our Sebago Tower, and a large portion of the transmission line needs to be replaced and repaired. This involves not just good weather, but also extra tower climbers as well. All systems are go for the repair today. Again, some of you may already hear us on a low-power 90.1 FM signal, but we expect to be back up to full power this afternoon. Thanks again for your continued patience and understanding. We'll keep you posted.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, should Maine change the way it selects its constitutional officers? With me in our Augusta studio, Republican State Senator Andre Cushing, Democratic State Representative Danny Martin, and UMaine Farmington political science professor Jim Melcher. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. If you do Twitter, you can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go straight to Holton and Mike. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Andre and Representative Martin and Professor Melcher. This is Mike Carpenter. I had the great honor of being Attorney General from 1991 to 1995, and I want to give you a real brief historical overview. Since I've been following Maine politics, you had an independent governor in Longley, Democrat in Brennan, Republican McKernan, independent King, and now you have Republican LePage. During that period of time, you had Republican Dick Cohen, U.S. Attorney General, Joe Brennan was Attorney General, Jim Tierney was Attorney General, myself, Drew Ketterer, Steve Rowe, J. Janet Mills, Bill Schneider, and now Janet Mills again. I ran up and down this state three different times in 86 and 90 and 92. You have no idea how seriously the legislators take this responsibility of electing the Attorney General. Not one time in the hundreds, literally hundreds of people that I campaigned with and asked for support from, did I ever get an improper question, did I ever get a suggestion that they would support me if I was a partisan when I took the office or whatever. So the office has worked extraordinarily well. I'm well familiar with those states where they elect the Attorney General. I served with many of those folks for the 4 years that I was in the office, and many of them had aspirations for higher office. Many of them, or several of them, got tangled up in campaign finance issues trying to raise money to run a statewide office, either governor of the state or U.S. senator or whatever. And several of them, frankly, went to jail. If you make it an elected position, as Danny Martin said, you then put in place a whole new fundraising mechanism that is just fraught with problems when you're the chief law enforcement officer of the state. I think that is not something we want to get into. Likewise, with the appointment by the governor, I agree with Representative Martin again, it seems to be about power, and that, in my opinion, would be the worst scenario. Let me give you a quick example of why this has worked well. Look at who staffs the office of the Attorney General and look at the history of that office. I'm not aware, and Jennifer, I would invite your staff to go back and search the archives of the state of Maine. I'm not aware of any scandal involving the Attorney General other than the conflict between Governor LePage and current Attorney General Janet Mills. I'm not aware of any conflict, significant conflict, between chief executives. Jim Tierney ran against John McKernan for governor and lost. Jim Tierney then went back to the Attorney General's office and served 4 years as Attorney General for the man that had defeated him. I was Attorney General under Governor McKernan's last 4 years. We worked very well together. Look at the institutional memory. The people in that office don't turn over when there's a new Attorney General, whether it's
Mike Carpenter, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. And the one thought I have is, and I want to put this out to you, Andre Cushing, and to you, Representative Martin. Has politics changed in Maine a great deal since 1901 to 1995 when Mike Carpenter was Attorney General?
I serve in the state Senate with Senator Mike Carpenter, and I think with the electronic age, things have changed. Quite frankly, I serve with Governor Longley and Governor Brennan and now Governor Long LePage. I've never seen it as interesting as it is today.
It's a great adjective, Representative. I think we're in a time, and I concur with Representative Martin. I have only served for, you know, three terms fully now, but I've been around politics, and the social media and the technology has changed the dynamics of how people here are able to work through things. I think clearly this budget cycle is a great example of that. Media involvement, and it's your job to report and educate people, has changed to some degree because there are people outside of the building who are immediately writing because of Twitter and social media about things and people that they've not seen. And I always try to teach folks in our caucus, when you're dealing with issues, try to respond before you react, because there's always the immediate feeling that wells up from some of us when our name comes up or when something happens. And I think Representative Martin can appreciate this, too. It gets hot. You were here in the 90s, weren't you? It got very hot in this building.
I wasn't here in the 90s during the shutdown. I was back in Aroostook enjoying myself as Aroostook County Administrator.
All right.
Well, how about to Mike Carpenter's other point, which I think is a very good one. He points out there has been no hint of scandal or corruption, as Jim Melcher there has been around the country. I mean, we if you read the New York Times, Washington Post, watch CNN, you're hearing about, listen to NPR, things that you're not hearing about the attorneys general in Maine.
Well, and that's a broader, it's less about the attorney general specifically in Maine so much as Maine, as one of Daniel Elazar's moralistic culture states, is a state where there isn't a lot of corruption, that we expect civic engagement. We expect from both parties that people will be respectful, that people will be honest. There are certain states that, you know, a lot of the governors have gone to jail. You know, Maryland, Illinois, you look at problems in New Jersey, various other places. I think it's a function of Maine's political culture not being tolerant of that type. But the caller is absolutely right that attorney general is, in a lot of states, a major launching pad to become governor, that a lot of people joke that AG stands for ambition to be governor. And that and lieutenant governor, two of the biggest launching pads for these things. But I think it's a broader sense that we are really good in this state in running a clean ship at all levels of government, for the most part, compared to other places.
Mike Carpenter, thank you so much for calling in with your perspective. We are going to move on. I really appreciate, though, Mike Carpenter, former Attorney General of Maine, calling from Holton. To Aroostook County folks on our show so far today, and we're not even halfway through. That's terrific. We're going to go to Ann Luther now. She's advocacy chair for the League of Women Voters in Maine. Hi, Ann. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call.
Is the League of Women Voters taking a stand on the various bills before the legislature that could change the way Maine selects its constitutional officers?
You know, we're a membership organization, and we take positions on issues where our members have studied the issue and reached consensus one way or another, and we don't have a position on this issue. But we do have some observations and some questions and concerns. And, you know, one of them has already been mentioned, which is the question of money in politics. If these offices run for a statewide election, those can be very expensive elections. We assume that they would be running under current campaign finance limits, but we would have to decide what limits would apply. Would they be the same as for governor or lower? And then we would certainly want those candidates to have a public funding option under the Maine Clean Election Act, a robust public funding option under the Maine Clean Election Act. So if we went forward, we would have to take that into consideration as well. Also, we observe that we have enjoyed, in the departments that we're talking about, the Secretary of State's office, the League does a lot of work with the Secretary of State's office, a little bit with the Attorney General's office, a little bit less so with the Treasurer's office, but we do observe that when these offices change, you know, whatever party affiliation the incumbent may have, the change in staff in these offices is really very small. It's the top office holder and maybe one or two other staff members that turn over. The majority of these departments are staffed by highly qualified, nonpartisan professionals that serve the interests of Maine people with a lot of expertise and dedication, and we would not want to see the offices further politicized. We, you know, we're for a professional civil service, and we think that our current system is providing that as it stands right now. We would not want to see that eroded because people owed political favors when they took the office more than what they do now.
Okay.
And then the other thing.
Okay. Well, Ann, thank you. Okay.
I just want to make one other point, and that is that as the elections are taking place right now, the one limitation is that the public is not aware. You know, the elections are taking place in the legislature over a matter of just a couple days, very shortly after the elections, and there's not a lot of public spotlight on who the candidates are or what their positions are. You know, lots of times people don't even know who's running until after the election took place, and that is one area in which we think the public could be better served under the current system.
That's a great point. I'm glad you were able to fit that in. I want to go back, Senator Cushing, to her original point and something that Representative Martin originally brought up. Are you concerned about the potential for money in these elections and the influence of especially money from outside of Maine if there were elected officers for Secretary of State, Attorney General, and Treasurer?
I appreciate the chance to talk about it because I think, and hello, Ann, how are you?
I'm well, Andrew. Thank you.
Good, good. I think that the issue that is here before us also has to reflect back on what Jim Melcher said about the integrity of the people who have served in these offices. Maine does not tolerate legislators or elected officials of any type that abuse their positions, whether they abuse the power or they abuse the money that comes to them. And it's a trust factor. We're very close to our citizens in the small districts we have in Maine, and I think that helps us to be more accountable. I'm curious, is it the League's position, Ann, or is it more your role with Maine Citizens for Clean Elections that brings you to highlight this issue?
Well, the League of Women Voters has had a very strong position since the 1970s on campaign finance reform, and the League's support for publicly financed elections was actually what led me to be involved with the Clean Election folks in the first place. So I think, you know, our positions are very much in unison on this issue.
Sure. And in fairness, you certainly hold a passionate position on that, and I respect the discussion that we've been having. But truthfully, it's a little disingenuous to talk about clean elections when it's really taxpayer-funded elections. We're talking about a method that takes taxpayers' money, at least $2 million from the general fund every year, and puts it into a fund that allows those of us running for office who choose to do that, which I don't, I run traditionally funded, to use taxpayer money to print our palm cards and pay for our campaign signs and go on the radio.
I think we're going to a different show here, though. We're going to talk about constitutional officers.
Okay,
Ann
sorry.
Luther, Advocacy Chair for the League of Women Voters in Maine, thank you so much for calling in to Maine Calling today. We're going to head back to Aroostook County and Anthony from Mapleton. Hi, Anthony. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I want to say that Maine Calling is one of the best features of Maine Public Radio.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'd also like to say that I consider myself fairly politically observant. I pay a great deal of attention to what's going on in Maine politics and Canadian politics and politics in the rest of the United States. And I would have to say I certainly agree that making these constitutional officers have to run for election in a public forum would be a horrible idea. The kinds of abuse that we've seen, especially for Attorney General, but also Secretary of State and Treasurer, who have to run for office in other states and then become beholden to donors, is just horrible. And I think it's a terrible idea. I think Maine got it right in the Constitution, whether it was just luck or whether it was planned that way. So I don't think that should be changed. On the other hand,
okay.
I do see,
go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, I do see a point to having a lieutenant governor, because if the governor should pass on or be unable to perform his duties, it would be a good thing, I think, to have someone who was popularly elected on the same slate to be able to continue on with the policies that, you know, presumably he and the governor were selected for. So I could see
Anthony,
adding...
yeah, thanks for your call. And quickly, before we go to a break, I want to ask both you, Representative Martin, and you, Senator Cushing, what you think of the lieutenant governor idea.
The concern that I would have is who would run the elections. You know, can you imagine a lieutenant governor?
Let's say we keep the Secretary of State, but add a lieutenant governor to
Maine. Well, the current bill would not keep the Secretary of State.
Right, right.
But if we were...
I'm talking theoretically.
Yeah.
I'd concur with the representative in terms of the aspect of somebody overseeing the elections that they'd be involved
right.
with. I think, though, a lieutenant governor, and when we have time, we maybe can talk about that, because it's an interesting dynamic in the bills that have been brought forward.
Sure. So maybe we can come back to that. Anthony, thank you so much for calling, and we do need to take a break. We'll be right back in about a minute. You're listening to Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Dean Wealth Advisors, independent investment advice to individuals, families, and institutions. DEIGHAN.com and Jones Associates, providing surveying, land use consulting, and forestry services for Maine landowners. More online at JonesAI.com.
This week, Morning Edition brought you the latest news from overnight. From wrangling over the Patriot Act,
Mitch McConnell made a last-ditch effort to at least rescue two of the less controversial parts of the Patriot Act before midnight.
To the sinking of a cruise ship on the Yangtze River.
More than 450 people were on board. Some actually swam ashore.
Every morning, we bring you what you need to know. Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us for Morning Edition each weekday morning at 6 a.m. And join us this afternoon at 1 o'clock for World Affairs, today's topic, coming together to support communities in times of crisis. That's World Affairs coming up after Main Calling at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
I'm actually staying.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Main Calling. We're having a great conversation here in the Augusta studio. Today on the program, should Maine change how it selects its constitutional officers? With me in our Augusta studio, Danny Martin, Democratic State Representative serving Sinclair, Andre Cushing, Republican State Senator representing Hamden, Jim Melcher, Professor of Political Science at UMaine Farmington. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Kernan. Kernan writes, I think it's important to note that Andre Cushing is or recently has been Maine representative of the American Legislative Exchange Council and is closely related to the Maine Heritage Policy Center, both proponents of elected constitutional officers. I am concerned that the election of those officers increases big money in the political system. I'm also concerned that the election will erase important historical memory. Senator Cushing.
Thank you. I am indeed the state chair for the American Legislative Exchange. I also attend and participate in NCSL and some other legislative events because I feel we need to engage with our colleagues to understand issues that come forward. In regard to the constitutional officers, in my time at those meetings, there have been no bills that have been brought up. Beside that fact, the issue of money is becoming a drumbeat, and sadly it is growing. Even under the taxpayer-funded model, there is a larger percentage of money coming into races. Representative Martin talked about the day when he could get elected for about $200 to the Maine Senate. You know, the last election, my campaign raised about $30,000, and it's troubling. Part of it is the costs. I mean, the days when you used to pay 15 cents for a stamp are gone, and printing costs have gone up. But beside that, the issue of electing these constitutional officers, I think, reverts back to the role of the integrity that comes from looking voters in the eye and having to earn their trust in the same way that we have to look the voters in the eye when we get elected. I'd be intrigued if, once we get off this subject, to spend a little more time on the dynamics of the lieutenant governor and how that system might evolve.
Sure. Well, let's talk about that. Go ahead, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Jennifer. I just like to go back to what former speaker mentioned. And unfortunately, not everybody runs as a clean election candidate, as you well know. You can choose like Senator Cushing did, and as I did in my state representative race, run under private funds. However, the concern that I would have with the current situation is the money in politics, and the fact that the political action committees. I mean, they can funnel an unlimited amount of money through one's campaign, and that's not fortunate to the individual who may not have the resources as his or her opponent would have.
If I could jump in with just one other thing before we get to the lieutenant governor issue, and I think that's an excellent one. I think it's a mistake to lump in attorney general in terms of what elections would look like with money and treasurer and secretary of state. Treasurer and secretary of state are low salience offices. People aren't going to pay that much attention to them. There might be some money flowing in from out of state, but I think there really isn't as much risk of that happening as there is with attorney general. Attorney generals are very prominent. Many of them, many Republican attorney generals participated in lawsuits against the Affordable Care Act or among other things, or joined multi-state consumer protection lawsuits. That's a much more visible office. So I think if there's a place where there's a risk that money's going to get out of control and money from out of state's going to get out of control, attorney general is much more likely to see that happen than the other two offices.
Okay, before we went to a break, we were talking about the idea of a lieutenant governor just a little bit. Senator Cushing, and we had to go to the break, but theoretically, if the lieutenant governor did not replace the secretary of state but were added to the officers of Maine, do you think it's a good idea?
I think there's some value to that. Historically, if you look at some of the people who have served in the role of state senate president, who is de facto the lieutenant governor now, some of them may not want to have ascended to that office. And there have certainly been, I think, instances where you could make the case that people who were thrust into that role found a way to quickly remove themselves from further.
When's the last time it happened, Representative Martin? You know. Or you think
sounds like a quiz show.
You're talking about succession?
Yes.
Yeah, Governor Reed.
Yeah.
Was elected. John Reed was elected.
Another good Roostook County man.
From Fort Fairfield. Different party, of course. But he not only was he elected when the former governor passed away, but was reelected. And as you know, he was president of the state Senate. I can't truly disagree with Senator Cushion. Again, Jennifer, your comment and your observation is theoretical.
That's right. The bill before the legislature is not this.
I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to a lieutenant governor position.
I think it started a good discussion. And trivia question for Jim Melcher. What also did John Reed's reelection portend? What change took place at that point?
Talk about a quiz show.
Ooh, well, after him is when Ken Curtis got elected and the income tax came in, which the governor also wants to get rid of, which would be another show, but I'm not sure what you're getting to.
But he was the first governor, if I'm not mistaken, that was elected to a four-year term.
I think you're right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. A lot of states made that change in the 60s. I think you are right. Or was it Curtis?
No, it was John Reed
Okay.
in his second
I knew it was the 60s.
There'll be a test.
I was young.
There'll be a test after this program. We're going to go briefly to Penny in Mount Desert Island. Hi, Penny.
Hi. I find this extremely interesting, and I have a request from the panel to recommend a political and structural history of Maine, a book of the political and history of Maine. And also, a brief question, what does the governor do other than have the power of the veto?
Okay, we'll start, Jim.
I'll take the first one. The book I would recommend most strongly is a book that was written by Ken Palmer, now retired to the University of Maine, called Maine Politics and Government, as part of the University of Nebraska series, where they've now come out, I think, with a book on every state. Christian Potholm, who's a professor at Bowdoin, has also written a book that lists sources of. He's written many, many books, but the one I'm thinking of is a list of sources of books about.
Game. The Splendid Game.
Okay, that's it. Okay. Yeah, he's written many that are a collection of his columns. This is a very different sort of one. And then there are many good histories. Neil Rold has written many. There have been a lot of good histories of the state. But I would really start with the Ken Palmer, and it's now in its second edition. Make sure you get the second edition so you can read up on, because I think John Baldacci hadn't been governor yet the first time.
Okay, what about the second half of Penny's question? The role of the governor, who wants to take a shot at a very brief.
The executive office contains a number of roles. Obviously, he has the veto power over legislation that comes to him. He has the appointment of justices, which are and boards and commissioners that are approved and confirmed in most cases by the Senate. He chooses the commissioners. He signs off on elections. He has oversight as to when bonds would be issued. So he has many of the core executive powers that are vested in other states. Some may have been exercised more than others. I found it interesting when they did the story about his record vetoes last session. I quickly went online and looked and found that Martin O'Malley, the Democratic governor now running for president in Maryland with a Democratic legislature, had more vetoes that session than Governor LePage did with a Republican and a Democratic legislature. I think also that you look at the aspects of the many functions the governor plays in the public debate forum. That's been significant. This issue we're talking about right here was initiated through some of his legislation.
I think the veto power the governor has is important and in a strong position. However, in my opinion, again, having served 8 years in the executive, where I think the governor can influence policy is through his or her appointees, whether they're judges or whether they're commissioners. And again, serving at the will and pleasure of the governor is important. You have to express your loyalty, and That's how I think a governor can exercise his powers and influence his policies, through those folks that he appoints or she appoints.
DHHS is a great example. You know, the having Mary Mayhew in
exactly.
is different from the sorts of policies Democratic governors had on a host of issues, without taking a side one way or another. Those appointments make a lot of difference.
You're right.
Just a side or follow-up note on this. I would concur with Representative Martin. The caliber of the people that you appoint in different positions many times will extend beyond you. And that's why I think the recent dust-up over the PUC commissioner is unfortunate, because this governor, when you look at the tragedy of what happened at the Turnpike Authority, he immediately went to someone who had run against him, who showed the integrity and the skill set in Peter Mills, and appointed him to that role, and he's done, in my opinion, a great job. We'll have differences probably in the discussion, but there were obviously some differences in philosophy at Maine State Housing. John Gallagher, who was appointed, didn't actually apply at first because he was a Democrat and didn't think he'd be considered. The governor's office, when they found out about him, reached out, and he's proven to be a very good director. Paul Signolfi at Workers' Comp. I think we can go through a list of a lot of qualified and talented people, and regardless of our policy politically, I think that's important to the good operation of Maine, the quality of the people we all see in those offices.
Thank you, Penny. It's a good question, and I think go ahead, Representative Martin.
I was just going to say, Jennifer, I totally agree with Senator Cushing in his last statement. He's right on.
So we are going to try to squeeze in one more question. James from Sorrento, can you speak quickly, please?
Well, I'm sorry I have to speak so quickly, but I'm also glad that you saved me having to write multiple letters to newspapers on this issue.
You can still write them.
I served in the 107th Maine Legislature under an independent governor with a Democratic House and a Republican Senate, and somehow we got a few things done, like the bottle law, and I served on a state government committee, which cleaned up a vestige of English law, just like our early constitution, which was the executive council, which somebody cited as New Hampshire having. I don't take New Hampshire as a model, because they have a legislature of 400 people that serves for $200 a biennium, and you get just about what you'd expect. But anyway, I have a little different perspective in that I came to Maine from far rural New York State, where I grew up on a dairy farm further from the state capital in Albany than we were from Washington, D.C. And they do have a lieutenant governor, which I think is a very bad idea, because nobody in upstate New York had any clue of who they were voting for any more than they would for the attorney general. I like the present system. I would retain it. I remember serving.
James Wagoner, we're going to have to cut you off, but I appreciate your perspective. And boy, we could go somewhere else comparing Maine to New York State, couldn't we, Jim Melcher?
We could.
Thank you so much for calling in. What a great conversation today. Jim Melcher, professor of political science at UMaine Farmington. Andre Cushing, Republican state senator representing Hamden. Danny Martin, Democratic state representative representing Sinclair. Thank you all three for being here in our Augusta studio today. John Keimel ran the board today. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Jim, I think you should have all your students listen today. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join Keith Shortall for an update on the latest happenings here in Augusta. He'll be joined by the Bangor Daily News, He Said, She Said bloggers Cynthia Dill and Michael Chinquette. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.